It is indeed a privilege for me, for us to be here. It feels more than I had anticipated. It feels like coming home. When we drove up, I was thinking, okay, who are the people in at Covenant? And, yeah, I could name a few, and then, oh wow, there's so many more that we've known. Crossing over to the other side. When I was writing down my thoughts, as often happens, I just write whatever. And by the time I was finished, I was on what you're supposed to be usually, the way I do things, usually page 7, page 8, and I ended up with 16. So then I talked to Kevin and I said, how about if we go part 1 and part 2? So that's what we'll do. We will continue next Sunday as well. It's continuing on this thought. It is true. Here we have a story of where Jesus and his disciples want to cross over to the other side. And in that crossing over, there is a lot of fear. And we'll continue on that one next Sunday. I don't know, maybe in the interest of time, you were cut your story short. I was wondering whether you wanted to elaborate on the overcoming fear of the moon with Pearl helping you, or should we leave it right there?
Well, you said I shouldn't steal your thunder.
Oh. We are in the season between celebrating the birth of Jesus and, in a matter of weeks, we begin the season of Lent, where we look at the suffering and death. But here we have a story of Jesus in the midst of his life in ministry. Ever since Jesus declared his readiness to enter the ministry that God had for him, the people around him, and in particular the disciples, had to learn and discover, who in the world is this guy? And we too are part of that group of disciples. We're all on a continuing journey, and I hope that we have a different opinion, different thoughts of Jesus now than when we were in grade 2. We need to learn to know who this amazing man is, mysterious and yet so compassionate, with surprises awaiting almost around most every corner. So today, yes, a familiar story, a story full of drama. And we, together with the disciples, ask that question: who is this man? The three synoptic gospels relate this story pretty much somewhere in the middle of his ministry. It's not at the beginning, not at the end. And so Jesus has become rather popular. People know him because he has been performing miracles, he's been healing the sick, caring for the poor, the lame, the outcasts. And there are numerous moments where he teaches them in amazing ways. And there's a big following. Lots of people are intrigued, and they come and they follow him. The gospel writers talk about the crowds and the multitudes that gather around Jesus. And while that, on the one hand, is exciting, thinking of Jesus himself, it must also be exhausting. We all know and we understand that we need people. But we also understand there come those times when we need to get away. I need time for quiet and solitude. And so this passage begins on that day when it was evening. And we have to assume that it was a full day of activity, walking, teaching, interacting with people. when it was evening, when you and I encounter the evening, we're tired, and rightly so. When it was evening, he said to them, let us go across to the other side. And then Mark makes it a point of saying, and leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Now, before we get to the storm, let's get just a bit of a sense of the geography. I don't know, is there anyone here who has been to Palestine, to Galilee? Okay, there are a few. I have not, and so I rely on maps and on pictures and so on. But if we go to the next slide, just a map, a geography. The Sea of Galilee is up on top on the north end, and Galilee is that region to the left, to the west, and so we have Samaria underneath, and Judea is down below. And so the Sea of Galilee is where this is taking place. Go to the next picture. I found this and I said, oh, I've never really thought of Galilee like this. Lots of rugged areas, I understand, but also obviously some lush growth. And then a picture of the Sea of Galilee, just to get a sense of reality, not only a map. And the next picture as well, a different vantage point, the wind has picked up some, and so on. And then one more, the Sea of Galilee, I'm told, is about 13 miles from north to south. 13 miles ballpark would be about from here till where? U.S. border? Maybe not quite that far. Morden to Plum Coulee. Okay. And wide is from Morden to Winkler, about 8 miles. And if I try to imagine that instead of driving along number three here, that this would all be water heading to Morden, okay, what would that look like? Can you see Morden from here? Depending, maybe not today when it's storming. And on the left side, we see familiar names. We see Capernaum, we see Magdala, we know Mary Magdalene, she came from Magdala. We see Cana, we see Nazareth, and so on. But then we're crossing over to the other side. There's Gadara. We'll get to that next week. Matthew talks about the Gadarenes, and so on. And then another picture that I found of the remains of a fishing boat, a first century fishing boat discovered in 86, when the lake was really down, was really low. The dimensions about 27 feet long. How long is this sanctuary, Doug? Not. It's a little more than 27. Okay. So imagine the boat, 7.5 feet wide. This is not quite 6 feet, so a little wider than my wingspan here. That's the boat. That's what they were riding in. Now, when I get into a story, I try to find myself in that story. I try to reimagine the scene. How would I have felt had I been there at that moment? And so they start off. And this morning I became aware again that they did not have the luxury of a weather channel to look up. Yesterday I looked at Weather Channel and said, okay, what's the weather going to be? And I talked to Kevin, and I looked again this morning, and nope, we should be okay. And here I am, without a whole lot of fear. Visibility was, yeah, a bit questionable at times, but no reason for concern. They did not have that. And so what seemed probably relatively peaceful at first changed. There may have been some slight rocking in the gentle waves, but I'm guessing that the cool evening was a welcome breeze, would have been good for them. But then we are very quickly thrown into a windstorm. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat against the boat. They beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. I've never been in that kind of a situation. I've been in a boat crossing the Lake Winnipeg, and the waves were for real. But we had gear, and people knew how to maneuver the boat. These are men who know the water. Several of them are experienced fishermen. They know how to maneuver the boats. They know the signs of danger. And at first, they may have been a bit concerned, and how bad will this one get? But quickly, their concern turns to desperation and simply hard work. Trying to maintain the direction of the boat into the waves, fighting the wind, and desperation turns to utter fear for their lives. One of the things that has always been a bit of a puzzle for me in this story is the part where Jesus can simply sleep. In all of this wind, and by now the huge waves, water splashing, drenching the disciples, I would think, in the reckless tossing of the boat, he lies apparently oblivious to all of this commotion, asleep on a cushion. How does that work? Maybe you've been there, maybe you understand it. Was he so fatigued in body and mind from his contact, his involvement, his interaction with the crowd in previous days that he simply crashes, that he notices nothing? And I've also wondered whether the disciples may have been at least a little bit annoyed that Jesus was asleep. This person who doesn't seem to care about their well-being. Surely he can at least be bailing water. That's reading between the lines. Nonetheless, in their desperate fear, they turn to Jesus, they wake him up. And it seems not only to wake him up, to ask him for help, but according to Mark, there's a bit of an accusation here as well. Teacher, don't you care? Almost as if there's like, what's wrong with you? Like, somehow he can show great care and compassion for the sick and the people in the margins of society, but somehow he doesn't give a rip about us. Teacher, don't you care, for we are going down. With that, Jesus gets up. He braces himself the way I imagine it. He leans into the wind, raises his hand, and a firm voice, "Peace, be still." And with that, everything changes. This story has been the subject of numerous song settings. Composers take it and set it to music. In my youth, singing in the church choir, we used to sing, and maybe some of you as well, "Master, the tempest is raging, the billows are tossing high." Familiar? Yes. "The sky is o'ershadowed with blackness, no shelter or help is nigh. Carest thou not that we perish? How canst thou lie asleep? When each moment so madly is threatening, a grave in the angry deep." And then the refrain that has that rising, if you know the song, really well written. It has also been the subject of several famous painters that take this and set the scene on canvas. And perhaps the most known one is the one by Rembrandt, the Dutch painter, some almost 300 years ago, in 1733, when he was 26. He paints this one called Jesus Calming the Storm. In true Rembrandt style, he highlights what is of importance in the subject matter. For Rembrandt, there is always a source of light. Light that shines upon the main subject matter. Now, most of the image in the whole picture is dark. There's an ominous sense about it, the dark clouds, but also the portrayal of the darkness, the trauma of the situation. And one also notices very quickly the stark diagonal lines that he creates. Created the diagonal line by the rising of the wave that lifts the boat in the front. That's dramatic. But then also the slanting line of the mast. And then we have that circular shape of the sail that helps our eye go around the sail, and then it comes back down, and then we encounter the waves, the light brings us there, and then the sail again, and it helps us to bring action into the painting. There's that rolling motion of the wind and the waves and the tossing of the boat. A diagonal line will always create action or tension, or it may also suggest instability, perhaps weakness and doubt. With the use of the diagonal mast that he creates, and that's a fairly distinct line across the canvas, Rembrandt creates actually two parts, two triangles to the painting. On the left, we have the drama, the force of the winds and the waves crashing again and again. And yet the light comes that may suggest there is a sense of hope. And the light highlights the straining and the worry of the men that are up on top and on the left, working hard to stabilize the boat, hanging on for dear life. And then we have the other side, the bottom to the right. Can you go to the next slide? That's the left side. Yeah, just stay with that for a little bit. So much action, the waves and the wind is obviously there, and the work of the men. And then we go to the bottom right side, which is conspicuously a very different kind of a scene. Here Rembrandt depicts a scene which is in itself appears almost calm, like an ordinary teaching session almost, interacting with his disciples. We see two disciples reaching out to Jesus, and Jesus seems, perhaps this is the moment where he admonishes them, "Why are you afraid? Where is your faith?" And in the foreground, if you can see in the bottom, there is someone who's in serious trouble, leaning over the edge of the boat. How do we say it? Hurling his cookies of seasickness, feeding the fish. But then we have another person in the foreground, just to the left, who seems to be looking at the camera, as it were, as if he wants to be seen and recognized. And if we were to take time to count all the people in the boat, if we think of the story, we would assume that there were 12 disciples and Jesus would be 13. But when we count all of them, and if you want to count them later, we can, there are 14. And so this man in the blue coat looking at us, maybe, as was rather a common practice, would be for the painter himself to paint himself into the picture. Or, if this was a commissioned painting, then he might be painting the commissioner into the painting. So one might assume that could be Rembrandt saying, "I was there. I understand fear. I understand the dynamics when Jesus is present. How would you create a storm on canvas? What experience would you draw from to create a storm on canvas? I've wondered whether when the disciples call on Jesus to address that, the very thing that threatens their very lives, when he says to the wind and the waves, "Peace, be still," whether Jesus isn't as much saying it to them in their anxiety and fear as he is saying it to the wind. Yes, peace, be still, wind, calm down. But maybe implicit in that very statement is also for us, peace, be still. We need the wind to relax and be still. But you, my disciples, my friends, my children, need that same peace. You need to be still when I am in the boat with you. Psalm 46, already referred to today, is one of those psalms that one goes to. God of our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble, therefore I will not fear. Though the earth should change, really, you will not be afraid? Though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult? And then at the end of that psalm, be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations and in the earth. Fear and anxiety will always be part of the human experience, as so many of the psalms reflect that as well, and perhaps none more than Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me, from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but find no rest. Isn't it most fascinating that when Jesus himself, when death stared him in the face, that he cried out in a very similar fashion? My God, where are you? Now that, I don't know, I'd never thought of that before. That just struck me the other day. And that could be a point of discussion, we'll leave that for another time. The bewildered disciples can't believe their eyes. The wind ceased and there is a dead calm. Whereupon he turns his attention to them. Why are you afraid? And part of me wants to say, duh, or no. Have you still no faith? Where do we find ourselves in that picture? In disbelief and in great amazement at the same time, they turn to each other, I'm assuming softly saying, maybe mumbling the question that has been lingering in their soul ever since they met Jesus. He heals the sick, he does all kinds of miracles, and now this as well. Even the wind and the sea obey him. Who is he? Years ago, Philip Yancey wrote the book, The Jesus I Never Knew. I'm assuming a number of you have read that. How he shared the things that he learned about Jesus as he got older. The Jesus that he had learned about as when he was a child and a youth, he realized, no, there's more to Jesus than what I knew, what I learned when I was a youth. And I trust that we are all on this journey, learning to know this man who sometimes defies and regards so much of Jewish tradition. But at the same time, he demonstrates unprecedented compassion for the sick, for the outcasts. And then he calls us to follow him and to learn to know him. to follow him to places we've never been before. So I'm wondering what the stories are here in this congregation about the storms that we have faced, about 2 and a bit months ago, I broke my ankle. No, it was more than that. It was painful. We have knee surgeries. We deal with conditions and then we fall. What are the stories in our lives where we experience the storms? Who's in the boat with us? What was it that helped, that wanted to threaten our well-being? And how do we manage to find peace and stillness, both in the forces around us, but also within us, the spirit, our spirit itself? We too, with the disciples, are reprimanded to have faith, while at the same time realizing with the disciples, and then with Jesus himself, that when anxieties hit, when our very lives are threatened, when we can't go it on our own, we too can call on Jesus to share our anxieties with him.